morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to our Q3 results call. My name is Andrew Bester, Chief Executive of the Cooperative Bank, and I'm joined by Nick Slate, my CFO. I'm going to just give some high-level sort of summary of the results, and then Nick's going to run through some of the specifics on the financials. So in terms of the overall quarter, we feel like it's been a resilient performance against the plan that we put together last year, and that's despite the fact there's been a relatively challenging retail market and some aspects of income uncertainty. The thing I'm particularly encouraged by is a combination of better execution of our plan with our customers, but at the same time continuing to simplify, de-risk the bank, and seek opportunities to drive cost efficiencies. In terms of the overall financial headlines, pleased to report a small underlying profit year-to-date, and off the back of that, we are going to enhance our guidance from what was 110% down to 105% for the full year. Capital has continued to be strong with the Core Tier 1, CET1 ratio at 20.7%, that's despite having taken a £60 million PPI charge in the quarter. In terms of capital, we have also recently received updated total capital requirement information from the regulator, and that's resulted in a 2.15% reduction in our regulatory capital. And I'm personally particularly encouraged with that as we continue to simplify and de-risk the bank. The quarter also saw us successfully securitise £340 million of our legacy Optimum portfolio, and again, all part of continuing to ensure that we de-risk the bank, but crucially focus our resources on the build of our franchise with our very strong, loyal 3.5 million customers. We also will provide further clarity on the PPI charge, and Nick will run through some of the detail on that. From a customer perspective in the quarter, we continued our greater profile with our People with Purpose brand campaign, really reinforcing our values and ethics as a key differentiator. We continue and remain the highest ethically perceived bank in the UK, and what's been good to see is us continuing to reinforce that with our customers. And also happy to report that we've continued to implement new capability in our mobile and digital platforms. And we now have 10 new customer journeys and on our 9th release of our new mobile platform this year. And we're sort of firmly in third place around current account NPS at plus 27, which puts us in a good place and really starts to reinforce the trust our customers have in that. To the end of the point of trust, we were pleased in the quarter to win Moneyfacts Most Trusted Mainstream Bank Award, which is, again, good recognition for the Cooperative Bank, which has always been renowned for its service and customer focus, and good to get that recognition from a trust perspective. If I turn to page 3, what I'm also particularly encouraged by is starting to see some of the input energy that we've been driving as a management team with all our colleagues, and starting to see good balance sheet growth, so 3.4% core mortgage growth year-to-date. And equally encouraged that, crucially, we continue to be able to get the core retail franchise deposits and the SME deposits starting to grow. Also, in the quarter at 3.5%. And for me, the key is getting that deposit velocity happening, and that's coming at a good low average of cost of 60 basis points. Around some of the fixing of the basics in the bank and continuing the transformation, other features of the quarter, and indeed in October before the results announcement, we renewed our contract with IBM, our cornerstone IT provider, and also Capita, who service our mortgages. So again, some good opportunities there to both improve the service and offerings we provide our customers, but also good opportunities to deliver greater efficiencies from a cost point of view over those contract terms. Our desktop transformation is delivered, and our separation project is in the final stages. We finalise the separation from the cooperative group, which has been a project that has been running the second phase of it for the last 18 months, and we're very near completion on that. On digital, as I alluded to earlier, continued good momentum and our new SME platform for business current accounts is now active and up and running. We also continue the simplification and de-risking activity, and it's this combination of strategic focus we have on making sure at the front end we continue to provide for our very loyal, very committed customer base, 3.5 million retail customers and the 85,000 SME customers who want to bank with a bank. They bank with us for our ethical difference, and as we start bringing more capability, starting to bring that to bear. And the other encouraging part is our legacy asset portfolio now is now less than 5% of our total assets. So good progress there, but I'll pass it over to Nick to run you through the numbers in more detail.
Thanks, Andrew. If we turn on to page 4, starting with the income statement, we are reporting an underlying profit of 2.3 million versus 14.3 million in 2018. Our loss before tax has increased by 36% to 118.6 million. Largely as a function of the PPI charge in the quarter, which I'll cover in more detail on page 10. Core income is flat at 285.2 million as sustained margin pressure in retail is offset by an increase in treasury income. This sustained margin pressure has impacted net interest margin down 31 basis points to 176 basis points. Treasury income is driven by Visa gains and some gilt sales. We completed the securitisation of £340 million of Optima assets in the quarter as we continue to de-risk the legacy portfolio, which now, as Andrew said, represents less than 5% of our total assets. Expenditure is broadly flat at £281.3 million as management actions are offset by planned investment into the business. Our underlying cost-income ratio is 98.1%. We are updating our cost-income ratio guidance, which improves to less than 105%, previously less than 110%. We continue to run a high-quality loan book with a cost of risk of just 2 basis points. The loss before tax of 118.6 million is driven by 60 million PPR charge in the quarter, flat strategic change costs, and a change in valuation of our surrendered loss debtor. In summary, although it's been a disappointing result in terms of the impact of PPR, we are pleased with the progress we are making against plan. If you turn on to page 5, we have more detail on our core mortgage and customer deposit flows. We have seen 3.4% growth in our mortgage book year to date, a net increase of 526 million to over 16 billion. In the quarter, new business completion and retentions were 1.5 billion combined. Retention is up 4% year on year. And while gross customer lending rates are lower, reflecting margin pressure, we have seen our new business margins increase sequentially quarter on quarter through 2019. Core customer deposits on the right-hand graph have decreased by 0.5%. However, we've seen strong performance from our franchise and SME deposits, up 3.5% or £512 million collectively, offset by a 14.7% reduction in more expensive term balances as we continue to optimise our cost of funds at circa 60 basis points, 15 basis points below base rate. Turning on to page 6, you can see more detail on net interest income and NIM. Net interest income is down 28.7 million or 11% as expected due to NIM contraction and Tier 2 expense. You can see on the bottom chart that overall NIM has reduced by 31 basis points to 176. We have highlighted the impact of our core customer base, which contributes 19 basis points of the overall reduction. 12 basis points are driven from non-customer activity. We are still tracking to full-year 2019 customer NIM guidance of 170 basis points. On page 7, and operating expenditure. Our operating expenditure remains broadly flat at 281.3 million. As we've communicated previously, cost efficiencies that have been achieved in 2019 have been offset by brand investment and other discretionary spend. Costs have reduced quarter on quarter in 2019, although the third quarter does contain a number of one-off items that aren't reflective of our run rate. As previously mentioned, our cost income ratio for Q3 is 98.1%. And we have updated full-year guidance to less than 105%, previously less than 110. In Q3, we laid the groundwork for future cost savings, as Andrew said, with a focus on contract negotiations with key strategic partners, including Capita and IBM. The benefits of these negotiations are not reflected in Q3 numbers, but will help reduce the non-staff costs in 2020 and beyond. On page 8, we have more information on our secure book. We continue to run a low-risk, high-quality book with an average retail mortgage LTV of 56.3%, which has reduced quarter-on-quarter in 2019. Average completion LTV remains broadly stable at 70.6%. The top right-hand graph highlights a reducing reliance on our largest geographical exposure, London and South East. This area has our lowest average LTV at 53.6%. And non-performing loan balances have more... Non-performing loan balances have more than halved from 187.3 million to 98.1 million and now represents just 0.5% of total book. On page 9, strategic costs, fix the basics phase is nearing completion. At the half year, we reported spend of 38.6 million, which has now increased to 56.1 million. The additional 17.5 million relates mainly to separation from the Carl Group and remains a key area of management focus in Q4. Spending on enabling the future has been focused on digitising the bank, and we've delivered some key milestones in the third quarter, including our first entirely in-app savings journey and the launch of the new SME platform. We're also progressing with the replatforming of our mortgages and savings system, spend on which will ramp up following the completion of separation. We're giving you a cash reconciliation on the bottom right, where you can see we have spent in total £113 million this year, with a low level of capitalisation of 24%, tracking to revised guidance. Turning the page to 10, we've included some information on PPI. In the quarter, we've booked an additional provision of £60 million. This is within the £55 to £75 million range we communicated in September, bringing total PPI provision for the year to £62.5 million. As widely reported across the sector, we also saw a much higher than anticipated number of claims and inquiries in the run-up to the bar date. The complaints received in the final week or afterwards through auto-conversion represents around 15% of the bank's total gross PPI complaints. Around 70% of inquiries and around 50% of the complaints received in H2 have now been assessed. The closing provision represents 13% of the total PPI charge for the bank, and based on third quarter utilisation rates, we'll see us past first half of 2020 and into third quarter next year. Turning on to page 11, we can see our capital profile. As Andrew mentioned, we have some very positive news to share, but first on Q3 performance. Our CET1 ratio has reduced by 1.6%. As you can see from the walk at the top of the page, this is largely driven by the impact of PPI. Despite this, our CET1 and total capital ratios remain strong at 20.7 and 25.2% respectively. The risk-weighted assets are down £324 million, or 6.6%, to £4.72 billion. £150 million from the Warwick 4 securitisation, along with other optimisation through management action. As mentioned before, legacy is now less than 5% of our balance sheet, but still accounts for 17% of risk-weighted assets, and therefore remains a focus of management. The chart at the bottom of the page highlights our minimum CET1 position and how our resources are utilised to meet overall capital requirements and MREL. Starting on the left, our CET1 ratio minimum requirement is 12.9%, which includes the 3.5% CRD4 buffer. Our CET1 ratio of 20.7% represents a surplus of 7.8%, or £370 million. Our OCR requirement is 20.2%, which comprises 8% Pillar 1, 8.69% ICR and 3.5% CRD4 buffers. Our OCR surplus is 4.7%, or £223 million. The right-hand stack highlights our current MREL requirement of TCR plus £200 million. We have a £200 million MREL issuance in plan subject to market conditions, as previously communicated. Which leads me nicely onto the good news. We are pleased to announce that post the closure of Q3 results, the bank received a revised individual capital requirement from the PRA of 6.54%, which is effective from November 2019. This means that our TCR is 14.54% of risk-weighted assets versus 16.69% at Q3. As you can see in the top right, we've made great progress in recent years with ICR reduced by 3.5% since December 17. If we were able to apply this updated TCR to our Q3 results, we would see a reduction in our total capital requirement of £101 million. At Q3 2019, the bank is reporting a surplus to TCR of £388 million. Applying the new requirement to the surplus to TCR on a pro forma basis would be £464 million, a £76 million improvement. We've shown the impact of the updated TCR on our end-state MREL on the right-hand side at the bottom, where we can see a 4.3% benefit. Based on the current balance sheet, this would translate to a £203 million reduction in requirements. We will provide a full view of updated capital requirements at our annual results, but if anyone has any questions, please feel free to get in touch with myself or Investor Relations. Turning on to page 12, finally, and liquidity and funding. Our loan deposit ratio remains stable at around 95%, up just 0.6% in the quarter. Our liquidity coverage ratio is typically stable in the mid-150% range, but is currently slightly inflated at 160.9% as a result of the recent Warwick 4 transaction. The graph in the top right of the page highlights 80% of our funding is derived from customer balances, with only £2.8 billion wholesale, predominantly TFS, of around £1 billion. Below this, we've broken out our primary and secondary liquidity for your information. I'll hand back to Andrew.
Thanks, Nick. So I hope what you can see is that the quarter represents good positive progress in what has been a challenging banking market. Underlying performance is encouraging, despite the fact that we took a £60 million charge for PPI, but also encouraged that we continue to de-risk and the bank and the capital guidance at 20.7 is achieved where we are, and we're encouraged by the reduction in the total capital requirements from the regulator. And in terms of delivering the transformation plan, again, we feel that we're starting to make progress, whether that's the digital engagement with our customers, completing the separation from the co-op group, and also working better with our suppliers to create both better outcomes for customers but also at lower cost. And the key is continuing to trust the cooperative bank, as I said earlier, the leading ethical banking brand in the UK, and starting to use that very loyal, strong customer base and starting to provide more services to them. So with that, very happy to take any questions. Hayley, I don't know if you want to just explain to everyone what people should do if they have any questions, please.
If you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to remove your question, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure that your phone is unmuted locally. To confirm, that's star followed by one to ask a question. And the first question comes from the line of Sachin Shah of Morgan Stanley.
Hi, a couple of questions for me. Just the first one, so just to make clear, that 200 million MREL requirement is unchanged by obviously the reduction in the ICR. The second one was, could you give us a sense now on what the strategic below-the-line costs for next year should be and what the key areas of spend are on that? And then finally, when I look at quarterly income, I guess you have the core customer income of around $80 million, and then treasury income, I think, was around $15. What's the right way to think about that $15 quarterly of treasury income going forward and how to drive that for 2020. And then finally, just in terms of the cost, so obviously, you know, quarter on quarter, you are now running, including the continuous improvement. So I guess excluding the continuous improvement spend, you're at about $83 million. Was that subject to any one-offs? Being down from the $90 million, or is that, again, a sensible run rate going forward?
Okay, well, let me. I'll start on your first question, and then pass to Nick. I think there were four questions in there, but let me give them a go. So, firstly, in terms of sort of MREL and shape, overall target is to get to the January 22 two times TCR, and we issued the Tier 2 earlier in the year. And we're going to wait for the right window to continue the glide path through to that issuance, so the issuance program needed going forward from here. So continue to work through that, and again, subject to market conditions, we will find the windows and continue to build that funding.
There's no hard date on when you actually need the 200.
No, from an overall point of view, it's just Bill working through the glide path. I mean, I think for me, it's just waiting for the right window as we continue the transformation of the bank. In terms of the other questions, I don't know, Nick, if you want to run through those. The first one was on strategic...
Treasury was one, wasn't it? I mean, the Treasury, we don't tend to forecast the income, some of the components in the Treasury line. So called out on slide six, this contains, we have, you know, Visa preference shares sitting in that line. And the other component in there was some of the sort of Treasury action taken on sort of rotating, if you like, some of our kind of high quality liquid asset portfolio into where asset swap spreads were on gilts. So we don't tend to forecast those. I would think of them more as more as one off. And as noted in on page six, you know, year to date, that's about £18 million of gains, really driven by the underlying share price of Visa during the course of this year. On the cost base, if you look at the chart, the quarter-on-quarter chart, I did say that Q3 is a little bit flattered. We had some balance sheet releases in Q3, you know, that would put it more in line with the second quarter. So you should probably think about it in the near future, sort of those sorts of levels. But as I said, sort of alluded to the fact that, with some of the strategic alignments that Andrew mentioned, Capita, IBM, you know, we expect that paves the way for, you know, future reductions as we go through 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, the other question you also raised is just on sort of investment going forward. We've guided to next year to be sort of sub-$100 on investments. You can expect that the P&L flow from that should be in a sort of $50 to $60 million type impact. So we continue to focus on building the capability that we need to build next year. I think less, you know, now more focused on a greater mix of real franchise investments in building the and simplifying some of our customer-facing platforms and digitization. Next question, please. Any other questions, Ailey?
Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone. The next question comes from the line of Ignacio Loscos of Oak Hill Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks a lot for your time this afternoon. I had a couple of questions. One, it's regards to the separation. When we say it's, when you say it's nearing completion, could we know what's left and when do you expect it to be finalized? And I guess my second question is on capital requirements. Obviously, it's a very good result, the reduction that you've achieved over the past month. And is there any? Are you expecting any further room for these requirements to come down once the separation is complete, or a large extent of this decrease in the requirement is due to the progress in the separation?
Okay, so I mean, just a couple of things. I mean, I think the first thing to say, and just so everyone's there for the call, I mean, our separation project from the co-op group is really the completion of work that's been happening from back 2016, 2017. Early on, sort of a firm mandate that the customer-facing systems were moved from the co-op group, and the work that's been happening over the last year and a half has been effectively getting a lot of the non-customer-facing systems transitioned. What's important to understand on the separation from the co-op group is this particular separation is not a single sort of big bang event. It's a whole series of activities have been happening, you know, over multiple weekends throughout this year. In terms of the specifics of where we are now, is we're right in the final stages of porting over some of the very last databases and in a phase of network monitoring. So we're right in the closing phases of that project. As your question as relates to future capital requirements, I mean, we're encouraged with the progress we're making. We also know we've got much more to do as a team to continue to both simplify some of our systems and our franchises, the way that some of our platforms, and that will continue. But what I would say is, I mean, you know, separation, as I say, has been a huge focus of the team, but it's not like a single big bang IT project. And so, you know, I wouldn't put a direct linkage with that on capital requirement. I'd be more focused on, you know, we'll continue to on the one hand, make sure we're providing ever more better services to our very loyal customer base, more products, and that be that SME customers or retail customers, and at the same time continue to focus on simplifying some of our customer systems. So a lot of the focus now is going to be on simplifying and digitizing our savings platforms and our mortgage platforms. So that's where we are. But I wouldn't make a linkage just between separation and capital. It's far more as we run the bank, looking to make sure we run the bank safely, diligently, and well. So we'll continue to seek to do that and with that drive better financial outcomes across all dimensions.
Well, just echo that. I mean, this is really just down to our annual ICAAP process and the feedback from the PRA that led to the 6.54% ICR. Yeah, obviously we hope that there's more room for manoeuvre as we move forward, 2020 and beyond. But this starts to bring us much more, you know, in line with our peer group. I would say.
Yeah, I guess my question is, if you look at the peer group, it's I guess everywhere between 3% and 5%. We're obviously getting much closer. If I don't recall wrongly, we were at almost 10% in 2017, even higher just before the restructuring. And just trying to get a sense whether getting somewhere even closer to the level of the rest of the peer group is achievable, or if there's still a lot to do before we can get there.
So, I mean, what I would say is what I've sought to do with the management team is just continue to focus on, you know, making sure that we, you know, things like de-risking some of the Optimum portfolio, continuing to run down our legacy assets, continue to focus on our systems and what we need to do, and it's all of that. So would I expect personally to continue to see progress? Yes, but I just need to keep making sure that the teams continue to, on the one hand, deliver for our customers, on the other, make sure that what we keep doing is simplifying the cooperative bank and making sure it has the systems and platforms and the risk management frameworks to do that. So I don't want to make any sort of, you know, forward-looking views on that, but what I can assure you is my commitment and focus as the CEO of the bank is to make sure that with this phenomenally ethically focused customer base that want to do more service to us, that we can do that safely and well, but also make sure we can provide them with better services. So I don't want to really give a forward view, but suffice to say I'm encouraged by the progress of the work that my team has been on, and we have more to do, but I'm encouraged by the direction of travel.
Okay, so thanks a lot, and congrats on the good results.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Are there any other questions, Hayley?
There are no further questions at this time.
Well, just like to thank you all for joining us this afternoon, and thank you for your continued interest and support, and we look forward to speaking soon. Thank you very much.